Start. There we go. And welcome this morning. It's good to be together with you all in a different setting format. So the tables have gone and we are now socially distanced in chairs. So we'll see how this goes. Kind of, you know, it's going to be funny. We're going to say, I missed the tables now. We get used to things, don't we? Welcome, by the way, to Master Sunday. Today's Master Sunday. I'm wearing my Master shirt. The final round of the Master is being played as we speak. Probably some on live stream or have two TVs set up. It's good to be with you this morning. I wanted to say one thing too. I appreciate from many of you and those streaming the notes of encouragement and text messages and Facebook things I've gotten. Regarding class has been nice and encouraging. I was trying to figure out how best to respond to this. I had a really nice card from Debbie Cole, and we don't get to see much of Debbie in a while, and it was nice to get a card from her and made me kind of think about this lesson because it very much relates to their circumstance. I've always considering all that Jamie's gone through with her brain surgeries and everything and the impact that has had not only on her life but on her entire family's life. I've always kind of considered them spiritual heroes for having to battle that on a daily basis, and definitely was thinking of them as I worked on what we were sharing this morning. So I appreciate Debbie and her family, and Jamie as an important part of our spiritual family. Whether we're going through personal ongoing tribulations in our lives, like the Coles have been going through for some time, or whether it's this more recent crises within our society, we're all living in a world of tribulation. We looked at that the other day. You know, that Jesus said, in this world you have tribulation, but take heart, I have overcome the world. So I was just thinking, I was making a quick list. Apparently we've now had record hurricanes, right? I think we're on Iota. As our next hurricane system. And so we've gone through the entire American naming system and now midway through the Greek alphabet. Maybe we'll complete the Greek alphabet before the hurricane season's over. Who knows? But we've had record hurricanes. We've obviously had this pandemic we've been going through that my grandkids originally were talking to G-Pa about the Rona. You got the Rona. Obviously that's been spiking numerically recently, record numbers. And I guess I don't watch the news much, but my life is always impacted when college football games are canceled. So I become aware of it all of a sudden. It's like, oh wow, what's causing that? It's like, oh, there's actually an international crisis. Oh, that. We got a disputed presidential election that continues to rage on, civil unrest, Western wildfires had consumed us, and we have been trying to learn how to live in virtual life, right? Whether it be in our business and work environment, our church environment, educational environment, even our family environment. This past April, when someone had her birthday, we had a Zoom birthday party for her. It was actually kind of interesting because it was the first time we had family from around the country all together in kind of a virtual room to celebrate that together. In fact, I didn't realize some of my family members had never met some of Selwyn's family members ever. So Zoom became, and Selwyn's birthday became the great union for that in our family. Obviously, job security has been an issue. Economic downturns and uncertainty certainly has been an impact. And not only have we faced those external threats, but we face the internal ones. The stress of uncertainty and change, fears of illness, an invisible invader who can attack us and even without notice and sometimes without symptom. We can be alienated from people, we've lost a lot of our structure and support, isolation, separation, even hostility over our responses. There's pretty strong opinions about masks or not masks, and distance and not distance, and whether you should do this or that. And some people get mad that you're imposing your rules on me and all this kind of thing. And certain people are idiots because they don't see it my way, and all the kind of things that begin to happen within our culture. Some are isolating and quarantining. Others are saying herd immunity, and we need to get out and build up that. And so we go on and on and on with our schedule. In fact, just this past, I mean, another way it impacts me, it's like all those things are interesting. What really matters is how it impacts me, right? Isn't that how we all operate? We've been planning Thanksgiving. Of course, there's controversy about how many people officially you can have for Thanksgiving, which has been nice because we've been able to exclude some that we really didn't want to come. for years, we've tolerated them, and now the coronavirus has given us a reason. But anyway, so my daughter's in Nashville, and she's been planning on coming down. This is actually our Thanksgiving, our big every other year Thanksgiving event with them. And then she sent us a notice that the Nashville mayor had announced that if you leave Nashville for Thanksgiving, that you'll have to quarantine for 2 weeks prior to your departure and 2 weeks when you return. And so she's like, I'm not sure I can lay out a month from work just to come to your house for Thanksgiving. So, and of course, my response is, the mayor's never going to know. But anyway. So we have different responses, though. In fact, the fact that I said that, some people go, I can't believe you said that. I realize that. And the Bible says we're to honor our authorities and all that kind of, I got that. So, anyway, that's the kind of stuff that's going on. And so in the midst of that, I wanted to start this morning with James as kind of a thought. So in James 1, verses 2 through 4, it says, count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kind, for you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness, and let steadfastness have its full effect, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. I know, I think it is, NIV says, consider pure joy, pure joy. Unadulterated joy. It's an interesting statement, right? Consider it joy when we meet and face trials. It's an odd kind of paradox, right? Joy and trials. Typically our joys come, the reason I said unadulterated joy is because mainly joy comes when things go my way, right? Which means that it's basically my joy is motivated by self-interest, selfishness, self-centeredness, and those kind of things. And so this is kind of challenging me in this unadulterated way to find joy in things when it doesn't go my way, when things aren't to my preference and to my pleasure. In the midst of trouble, finding the purity of joy. And it also isn't saying, I think, some of us will read that and kind of have this masochistic reaction, you know, kind of like, yeah, bring it on, man. The more it hurts, the better it is, you know, and find joy in pain. That's not healthy in some ways, but I understand how some people can view it that way. Or we end up with kind of this stoic, kind of military-like response, you know, that pain is just weakness leaving the body, you know, kind of attitude, like, it's just toughness, and we got to consider it when we go through these trials, and we just want to go hoo-ah through the trial. So I don't think that's what he's saying. What he's calling us to is the realization, finding joy in the fact that while I don't enjoy the trial, nobody likes this, I have a vision for what it's going to produce that I can't get to without. There's a character traits, there's maturities that are going to happen, There's growth that's going to take place in my life that I could not get to any other way but through trial. And so I embrace it with that sense of optimism. You know, and so, you know, I was kind of asking the question this morning, what are you to believe in times of trial? you know, that these times of trial are perfecting times, that they are maturing times, that they are completing times, that I'm becoming better because of them. And the challenge, obviously, is I become better based upon the kind of response. I can become worse through trials, right? I mean, some of we've known people, maybe some of us, have gone through difficult times, and now we're embittered and mad, and we're scared all the time, and we're paranoid. We never want to let that happen again in my life, and all those kind of things. So there is unhealthy responses the other way. But kind of the calling here is to allow the trials to refine me, to challenge me, to grow in ways that I wouldn't normally grow. Many times when I talk to people about pain, there's two kinds of pain. There's harmful pain, and there's healing pain. You know, if you're limping along with an injured knee, and your knee continues to get worse and worse and worse, and it hurts, and you're limping and all those kind of things, that's harmful pain. And people would say, well, you probably need to get knee replacement or have knee surgery or something like that. And then you come out of knee surgery, and your knee hurts worse, right? But now it's no longer a pain in harm. It's a pain toward healing. Does that make sense? It's a good pain that's leading to something positive. And so really I think the calling here as we encounter trial is to see it as a healing pain. Now, it can be either one in our lives depending upon how we respond to it. But the challenge is to let this become a healing pain. Let myself grow through this. Let me become through this something I could not become without it. And then I embrace it, and I'm refined by it, and I mature through it, and I grow through it, and it becomes a blessing. And that, in a sense, pain is like weights in a weight room, right? That as I go through life, I kind of get to the point I can kind of lift this same amount of weight, and it doesn't even challenge me anymore. It's kind of like, and I can, it strokes my ego because I can get out there and go, oh, look at that, I can do that a million times. Ha ha, ooh, look at that. Well, here, let's put these two plates on it. No, right? And that's the trial. That's the trials, right? God kind of says, hey, let's put some plates on that and let's help you grow now. And it's through that process. And then the pain that we, as we kind of drag ourselves out of the gym, we wake up the next morning sore and achy, but we're kind of like, but I'm becoming better through this, right? Is kind of the vision and the picture I think James is trying to help us to grasp in this. And so he gives us some responses too. He says, if any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask God. So one, in this process, and really wisdom is about the process of how do I see what I'm going through, right? That's wisdom. Wisdom has, spiritual wisdom, wisdom from above is what we've been talking about. It's how I see my joy, how I embrace that joy. I mean, how I see my trial and embrace my trial. How do I go through these things? Becomes kind of the opportunity. What's my wisdom here? Wisdom, I made some comments about it. You know, I've always heard wisdom is kind of applied knowledge or experiential knowledge. It's not ivory tower, master's degree, PhD knowledge. It's knowledge in the trenches. It's kind of knowledge with calluses. Knowledge because I got dirt under my fingernails. Wisdom, if that makes sense. And so he says that we are to seek God and look for wisdom through this. These experiences, these calluses, these things. I've had a lot of conversations with our guys at His Way recently in which one of the things that they struggle with is their emotions, their feelings. In fact, that's a phrase that we don't like around there a lot, but he's just into his feelings. That's one of the things we like to throw out when a guy's kind of getting all pouty and upset and all that kind of stuff. He's into his feelings. But anyway. But it's one of the things that guys in addiction struggle with is that because many times since they've been in addiction, since they've been 14, 15 years old, the reason I went into that was to numb my feelings because my feelings were painful and negative, so I used drugs or alcohol to somehow numb those feelings. And now I'm 35 years old, and now I'm waking up, and these feelings are beginning to wake up again. And I'm trying to do that soberly now, and I have all these feelings. I haven't developed the calluses of the 20 years of a sober life that would have developed to handle those feelings. And so they're hypersensitive, they're hyper tender, and I now got to go through the process of developing some calluses and kind of getting some dirt under the fingernails on those things and learning how to manage those emotions, those feelings, those trials that I haven't successfully managed or avoided managing in the past. So wisdom, seeking wisdom. God gives generously to all without reproach, and it will be given him. But let him ask in faith, he says, with no doubting. So we are to ask, we are to seek wisdom, and we are to do it in the confidence of knowing that God's going to grant it. That's faith. I believe that God's granting the wisdom. And I think, think about this practically for a second. I'm in a difficult and trying situation. I begin to pray for wisdom, and my wisdom believes that somehow through this trial, I'm developing a character, and certain things are being refined in me, and that type of thing. And now, as I pray that, I need to have the faith to believe that God's answering that. And so the difficulty with us sometimes is, right, that we may be going through a hard time, we pray, and then we hope that what God's going to do is just make the hard time go away, you know? But no, in faith, I believe that maybe it gets harder. And I go, wow, that's not what I was looking for. But I believe that God's made it harder, allowed it to become harder, so that I can continue to be refined. Does that make sense? That's faith. I'm embracing that trial in faith. And I don't always understand what it is. In fact, if God explained it to me, it wouldn't require faith anymore. Then I'd have it in the knowledge bank, and I'd just simply know it, and I wouldn't have to deal with it by faith. So the reality is this is a faith journey that I have to go through. And he says, without doubting, for the one who doubts is like a wave of the sea that is driven and tossed by the wind. For that person must not suppose that he will receive anything from the Lord. He is a double-minded man, unstable in all his ways. And so he warns us about doubting, about allowing ourselves to kind of be tossed here and there. I think about storms. How do you survive a storm? The key to surviving a storm is to bend without breaking. How do you adapt? That's kind of the word, adaptability. I'm not an expert on this, but here's my observation. Pine trees tend to snap in storms. And big oaks tend to just get uprooted in times of storms. And the key is, I always like willow trees because they always just kind of blow in the wind. You know, they're kind of flexible. That type of thing. I realize there's other trees that are flexible that way and can withstand a lot without uprooting, without breaking. And I think that's kind of the challenge that we need to have is in the midst of the trials, how do we stay rooted and how do we flex with the ever-changing circumstances? Because I think some of us have allowed our structures and our way of doing things to become so rigid, we're so rigid that we just get broken by the challenges of life. And then embittered in our brokenness. How do we adapt? How do we flex? You know, I'm not Darwinian by any stretch of the imagination regarding the origin of things or anything like that, but I do believe that there is a survival of the fittest. I believe people who adapt survive, people who don't go away. And that is a part of the maturing process and the developing process of our lives, that we need to learn to adapt. And I think that's going to be important even as we face the current cycles we're in, is to face that. There's another passage in Ephesians 4, and he talks about this very idea, again, in the context of the church. He gave the apostles, the prophets, the evangelists, the shepherds, and teachers to equip the saints for the work of ministry, for building up the body of Christ until we all attain to the unity of faith and the knowledge of the Son of God, to mature manhood, to the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ. So, the leadership is equipping the church in works of ministry as we unite together and mature together into the image of Jesus. That's the end game. That's Paul's vision here. God's given us elders. He's given us ministers. He's given us shepherds and teachers, given us evangelists, apostles, prophets, all those things for the purpose of maturing us into Jesus. And I think in our maturity, we'll become the effective ministers he would had us be, because we'll be like him. So that's kind of the vision. That's kind of the goal. And then the warning comes and sent, so that we may no longer be children tossed to and fro by the waves and carried about by every wind of doctrine, by human cunning, by craftiness and deceitful schemes. In other words, this becomes a way for us not to get blown with the wind, right? And we tend to get kind of caught up with being blown with the wind, and that's kind of the defense or the challenge that we have. And the question becomes, how do we defend ourselves against that? And I think a lot of us have faced that over our lives. We've just, you know, Sel and I, we were discussing on the way over here to church, and we weren't talking about my lesson, but just how people react to how they feel all the time. It's like, well, I'm not going to do that because of how I feel, and I don't do that because of how I feel. And I'm like, oh, that'd be, if I just always did what I did based on how I feel, man, that, I mean, the wind would be, I mean, that'd be a swirling wind. It wouldn't be just a wind from the north. It'd be swirling every moment. It could be different. And, I mean, I think it's important to recognize how you feel. You know, there's things I don't want to do, you know. I'm looking at you guys. I'm thinking about kids waking up in the middle of the night. You probably don't want to do that. It's like, oh, yeah, I felt like getting up at 2 in the morning and changing a diaper. That's what I felt like doing. It's like, no, but, hey, they're crying. We got to do something, right? So it's those kind of things. I mean, that's the reality. I mean, I think I admit how I feel, but I don't think I act on how I feel. But a lot of people in our culture particularly, that's, don't really give any thought. Just how do I feel in the moment? That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to say it because I feel. Man, I'm going to be honest. I'm just going to tell you how I feel. Well, maybe you're not. Maybe you should just be quiet. So, I mean, it kind of depends. That's kind of the challenge that we have for many of us. And then the thing he says, lastly in Ephesians here, is rather, and so he says, instead of that, instead of just being blown by the wind, speak the truth in love. I know we've heard Alan talk about this, truthing it. It's really about being in truth. It's like living truthfully. We're to grow up in every way into him who is the head, into Christ, from whom the whole body, joined and held together by every joint with which it is equipped, when each part is working properly, makes the body grow so that it builds itself up in love. And that, I mean, there's some great phrases in here. I wish we had more time to dissect it. But it's really about truthing it, being honest, being open, growing up togetherness until we all begin to, in a sense, the body becomes kind of this self-sufficient growth thing. It just kind of grows, building itself up. It becomes ever expanding and it's kind of interesting because he kind of paints a picture here that's a lot like the picture. I mean, God's picture of the church becomes most of our pictures as parents of our kids. You know, we expect them when they're young to be dependent on us, but we don't want to be changing diapers forever, right? It's like at some point, he's like, all right, it's time for me, I'm done with that. You know, and it's time for you to kind of take care of yourself. You should fix your own meals and do your own laundry and pay your own bills and, you know, get your own place to live and things like that. It's kind of God's process, kind of his plan for even the church to kind of grow up and take care of yourself. So that's kind of the challenge and the hope. Well, Luke tells a tale in Acts chapter 27. If you have your Bible or you have a phone, you might want to go there. We're going to be there in a second. But Luke tells the story of a harrowing journey, a tale of a fateful trip. And I want to look at this passage in Acts 27. Once I get there myself, I want to read this passage. I'm going to read it, and I'm going to mention some different passages that kind of come out of it, but it's about a storm. You know, Paul's in the storm, and so I want to kind of look at that for a second before I do. Ed Goad last week inspired me to bring my own water this time. He didn't really say that. He brought me water last time. I thought, well, I don't want to keep do that to Ed every week. So I became self-sufficient, right? I grew up, right? All right. So, as we look at this story, it says, "Now when the south wind blew gently, supposing that they had obtained their purpose, they weighed anchor and sailed along Crete close to the shore." Now Luke's writing this about Paul and his companions. "And soon a tempestuous wind called the nor'easter struck down from the land. And when the ship was caught and could not face the wind, we gave way to it and were driven along. Running under the lee of a small island called Kata, we managed with difficulty to secure the ship's boat. After hoisting it up, they used supports to undergird the ship. Then, fearing that they would run aground on Syrtis, they lowered the gear, and thus they were driven along." I always love this because it's kind of first century nautical language here. It's kind of cool. "Since we were violently storm-tossed, they began the next day to jettison the cargo. And on the third day, they threw the ship's tackle overboard with their own hands. When neither sun nor stars appeared for many days, and no small tempest lay on us, all hope of our being saved was at last abandoned." Can you imagine that? I mean, this isn't just a little storm for a half a day, right? This is a storm day after day after day. Haven't seen the sun, haven't seen the stars, haven't seen the moon. And after a while, all hope of being saved was at last abandoned. I mean, we're lost. It's gone. It's over. There's no possible chance. And then it goes on and says, "Since they had been without food for a long time, Paul stood up among them and said, 'Men, you should have listened to me and not have set sail from Crete and incurred this injury and loss.'" So I really appreciate that, right? You should have listened to me. That's right. Paul, the great tent maker who knows everything about sailing. "Yet now I urge you to take heart, for there will be no loss of life among you, but only of the ship. For this very night there stood before me an angel of God to whom I belong and whom I worship. And he said, 'Do not be afraid, Paul. You must stand before Caesar, and behold, God has granted you all those who sail with you. So take heart, men, for I have faith in God that it will be exactly as I have been told. But we must run aground on some island.'" So, I mean, here the news is, right, it's tough, it's difficult, we've abandoned all hope of being saved, and yet the message from God is, the faith is, God has given me a message, God has a plan here, God is working a purpose here. So don't give up, be faithful, trust, hang in there, right? And so that's kind of Paul's message to them. And then it says, where did I live? Okay. When the 14th night had come, so 14 nights. And think about it, 14 nights we're in this storm, right? I mean, it's the 15th today. So remember Halloween? that was the last, that was the last day we had a nice cruising day, right? Ever since then, since Halloween, we've been in a storm, all right? When the 14th night had come, as we were being driven across the Adriatic Sea, about midnight, the sailors suspected that they were nearing land. So they took a sounding and found 20 fathoms. A little farther on, they took a sounding again and found 15 fathoms. And fearing that we might run on the rocks, they let down 4 anchors from the stern and prayed for day to come. So these are people like typically weren't very faithful, right? These were sailors, but they were praying. And as the sailors were seeking to escape from the ship and had lowered the ship's boat into the sea under pretense of laying out anchors from the bow, right? So that's a good picture right there. It's like, they've been told, stay with the ship. God says we'll make it if you just hang in there. And they're like, yeah, we're just lowering some anchors. Don't pay attention to us. In the meantime, they're lowering boats, thinking they're going to get off the ship. Paul said to the centurion and the soldiers, unless these men stay in the ship, you cannot be saved. Then the soldiers cut away the ropes of the ship's boat and let it go. So, it's kind of an interesting contrast, right? These guys are trying to get off the ship so they can be saved, and yet Paul says, if you don't stay on the ship, you won't be saved. I don't have a promise from God on that. So the challenge is to stay with the ship. And then, let's see, where are we? Okay. As day was about to dawn, Paul urged them all to take some food, saying, "Today is the 14th day that you have continued in suspense and without food, having taken nothing. Therefore, I urge you to take some food, for it will give you strength, for not a hair is to perish from the head of any of you." And when he had said these things, he took bread, and giving thanks to God in the presence of all, he broke it and began to eat. When they were all encouraged and ate some food themselves, we were in all 276 persons in the ship, and when they had eaten enough, they lightened the ship, throwing out the wheat into the sea. So, again, I love this. I've never heard this before, but this would be a great communion talk, wouldn't it? And you know, that, you know, here in the midst of it, take some bread, give thanks to God, break it, and remember that we are in the ship of salvation. it's going to be okay. It's a storm. It's 14 days of storms, but we're still in the ship of salvation. And then it says, "Now when it was day, they did not recognize the land, but they noticed a bay with a beach on which they planned, if possible, to run the ship ashore. So they cast off the anchors and left them in the sea, at the same time loosening the ropes that tied the rudders. Then hoisting the foresail to the wind, they made for the beach." So they, you know, basically saw the beach. They took up the anchors finally. They've been dragged, kind of have these anchors down, trying to drag them just to keep themselves from being too driven by the wind. Then they lift the anchors up. All right, you know, it's basically, hold on, we're going to the beach, right? And so they finally see that there's this opportunity. They hoist the foresails to the wind. They made for the beach. But striking a reef, they ran the vessel aground. The bow stuck and remained immovable, and the stern was being broken up by the surf. The soldiers, I just point this out. They have this plan, right? They're surviving. They have a message from God that says you're going to make it. Now, they doubt it. They struggle with it. But some other people come and help them, right? I love that. It's like, no, you're going to be faithful. We're getting rid of your boats. You know? So you're with us. So sometimes we need people to do that, right? Sometimes we probably need people to cut our life rafts so we'll stay with the ship. Because sometimes we think we have a better idea. So anyway, they do that. They hang in there. They know they have a message. You'll make it. And so then finally they see the beach. They lift up the anchors. They throw up the sails. They're headed to the beach. We're going to make it. We're going to make it. And then they hit the reef. You know? We didn't make it. And so even when it looks like, even in that moment, when you finally see the beach in the midst of the trial, right? And you finally see that there's end in sight, there's hope here, there's a horizon, there's something to get to, we still hit a reef in the process. And so then the ship begins to break up again. And now we're in real trouble again. But it says here, the soldiers' plan, I love this too, the soldiers' plan was to kill the prisoners lest any should swim away and escape. But the centurion, wishing to save Paul, kept them from carrying out their plan. He ordered those who could swim to jump overboard first and make for land, the rest on planks or on pieces of the ship. And so it was that all were brought safely to land. So the promise was, in the midst of the trials, in the midst of the storms, in the midst of the difficulty, stay with the ship. Stay with the ship. And even when the ship runs aground, stay with the ship. I mean, at the end, it's kind of interesting. They some of them float to the beach on a plank from the ship, right? They didn't let go of the ship. They're like, I'm hanging on that ship. I know the ship's going to make it, so as long as I'm connected to the ship, I'm going to be okay, right? and so that becomes the great challenge. And so they were brought safely to land. Now, stay with the ship. That's kind of my point. Stay with the ship. In 1 Peter chapter 3, it's interesting because Peter uses this ark picture, Noah and the ark, as kind of a description, really, and a metaphor for what happens in Jesus. And it says, because they formerly did not obey when God's patience waited in the days of Noah, while the ark was being prepared, in which a few, that is eight persons, were brought safely through the water, this picture is used that Jesus is our ship, that Jesus is our ark, and that we are saved through the water in Jesus. And I think that's an important picture for us. And so I thought about it. This is, by the way, a picture of the SS Minnow wrecked on Gilligan's Island. I thought, really, we need to stick with the SS Jesus, and we don't need to get off, and we need to hang in there in spite of the difficulties and struggles. In fact, there's another passage in 1 Timothy where Paul talks about some people, says, holding faith and a good conscience, by rejecting this, some have made shipwreck of their faith, and he identifies exactly who those people are. So the reality is, sticking with the ship allows us to make it safely to where God's destination is for us. And I think one of the things I would just encourage us to do here, and I can't pretend to understand for any one of us individually and certainly internationally and nationally even, I don't know what all the things God is doing through these things. I don't know what the end game of these things is going to be. But I do believe in the midst of these storms that I'm in the right ship. And if I just maintain course and hang on the ship, everything will be okay. It'll work out fine. Will it be easy? No. We may hit a reef. We may have to float in on a plank. But hang in there and stay with the ship. Back in March and April, when this whole virus thing started, one of the things we struggled with at His Way was, what are we going to do? How are we going to respond? Because we're in a pretty close community, you know? And so we tried to, you know, try to put in as many things as we knew to put in, testing for temperatures and encouraging washing and mask wearing and different things we were trying to do to help impose. We created distancing so our class, when we do a bigger room and we spread out people and that kind of thing. The reality is they're roommates at the same time, so I'm not sure exactly how much that can help, but it was all an effort to try to accommodate. We had some rooms set aside as quarantine rooms, and we didn't bring any residents in for a month or two. And one of the things that we put in place was, if there ever was a positive COVID case, that we would obviously announce, we'd quarantine it and all those kind of things, but we'd also announce it to the guys. And if they felt like it was, they weren't comfortable being in a house where that existed, they would be free to leave temporarily until that threat was over, and then they could come back to the program. We never had that ever happen at His Way, thankfully. But unfortunately, some of our residents saw that as a window of opportunity to come up with a good reason to get out of the program, which is tragically consistent and normal. And so one of our brothers, Jason, chose to use this as kind of the window to leave. And tragically, you know, a few weeks later, overdosed and died, and we went to his funeral. And it was one of these guys who's a dear friend, been a dear friend of ours for a long time. And it was heartrending. But I remember one of the guys said, you know, he's told me, it made me think of all this, was he said, you know, it doesn't make sense to get out of the boat in the middle of a storm. And I think that's right. And I think that's what we need to remember, is that we need to stay in the ship. And we need to stay consistent with what God is having for us to do. In fact, the other day, we almost lost another one, you know? And it was a guy that was about ready to complete the program and just was kind of sick and tired of being sick and tired and was frustrated and just like, I just think I'm going to get out of here. And you know, a lot of us begged him and appealed to him and that kind of stuff, and he finally decided to stay. And so, I think we were all breathed a sigh of relief just knowing that there's a person that's not going to jump on the boat in the midst of the storm. So I just want to encourage us, stay on the ship and don't quit when things get difficult. So that's all I have this morning. I'm ending early this morning, but Sorry about that. Anyway, let me say a prayer for us, and we'll close. Father, I thank you for this time that we can be together. I thank you for this fellowship and for the encouragement of being together. Father, it's good to see so many here this morning. And I pray, Father, that as we all face this cultural storm, and beside that, whether we're in that together or whether it's our individual storms or whether it's our individual storms among this cultural storm, Father, help us to stay faithful to you. Help us to find joy in the midst of these difficult times, trusting you, believing you, that you are refining in us and through us things that we can't even begin to imagine. Father, help us to stay with your ship, to stay with your people, to stay with you in the midst of these difficult times, trusting you, holding course, that we may become all that you have for us to be. Father, I thank you for these challenges and for the opportunity we have to become what we could not any other way but through them. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.